Welcome to Center Stage Minnesota. Center Stage Minnesota is Northern Community Radio's show that focuses on the talents of Minnesota musicians. We take a look at what's going on around in Minnesota on an ongoing basis and try to put the spotlight on hopefully the best of it. That ranges from some of the most famous people to some people just starting out. We want to kind of expose all aspects of what it's like to be a musician in Minnesota. We've got music coming up from Minneapolis musician, singer-songwriter Sasha Mercedes, and an essay from Sasha Mercedes about parenthood and career decisions. We'll hear music from Sasha Mercedes, who's got a brand new record out called Lucky. Allison Scott on the way from her release from this year, called Hiding Under the Covers, Volume 2, a great record of covers. And we're going to go to begin the show right now with Miriam Tell, a person from Bemidji, from her 22 Bends release. This is Trout Lily.
The river flowing under oak and ash, before the leaves are showing. Pretty flower, you are rare and purest upon the hardwood bedding of the forest. Early springtime, winter's surely over. Thank you.
Trout Lily is the name of the track, and that is Miriam Tell from 22 Bends. That's a release from 1997. Center Stage Minnesota is an original series produced by Northern Community Radio and broadcast on the stations of the Ampers Network. Find us online at kaxe.org. Program support comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. I am Charlie Polkerbeck. I am your host for this edition of Center Stage Minnesota. In a little bit, we're going to hear an interview with Kevin Bow, a producer, a songwriter. He's got a resume, his very long resume, let's just put it that way. He's been around in the Minnesota music scene for a long time, and he sort of graduated from being in bands to being more behind the scenes and has done very well at that. We'll find out more about that later. He also has a new release out, almost more for fun, but he was up in the Bemidji area recently, and he stopped into our Northern Community Radio studios and talked to me along with a couple of his band members, and we'll hear that interview in a little bit. Coming up also, an essay from singer-songwriter from the Twin Cities, Sasha Mercedes. Right now, Allison Scott.
I can see very well. There's a boat on the reef with a broken back, and I can see it very well. There's a joke and a noise very well. It's one of those that I told you long ago. And take my word, I'm a madman, don't you know? Once a fool had a good part in the play. If it's so, would I still be here today? It's quite peculiar in a funny sort of way. They think it's very funny everything I say. Well, get a load of him, he's so insane. You better get your coat, dear. It looks like we'll be right back.
Sasha Mercedes. She's got a number of records out. She's spent almost her whole life in and around music. She grew up in northern Minnesota, has traveled all around the world, and now makes her home again in Minneapolis. This week, we've got an essay that delves into one aspect of being a musician.
You thought you were doing everything right. You sat down that night to a family dinner of Salisbury steak, mashed potatoes, and corn, where you shared with each other the day's rewards and kicks in the pants. You went the extra mile and made a blueberry cobbler with fruit you and your little pride and joy picked together for dessert. You asked them if they'd finished their homework, done their chores, and washed behind their ears. You read their favorite little bedtime fable and were just about to tuck them in when, from out of nowhere, your child utters a sentence that you will have to live with for the rest of your life. They look you right in the eyes, and you can see in those eyes a passion and a desperation to take what is about to work its way from inside their guts and then out of their mouth seriously, and not just dismiss it like parents so often do when their children talk. There is fear and what could almost pass as shame in their voice as they say the dreaded 10 words every parent shudders upon hearing. I want to be a musician when I grow up. And then their eyes plunge to the floor, awaiting the response that holds more weight than a freighter. And now, parent, you have a decision to make. Either you're going to be a supportive, open-minded individual, or you're going to be a liar for the rest of your life. And what I mean by a liar is that when your child is 45 and still wants to be a musician when they grow up, and your friends at the community potluck ask how your little Johnny's doing, despite the truth, you're going to tell them that Johnny's doing great. He just got a new job and a lovely new girlfriend who will make a great mother, and you're just waiting for those wedding bells and the little grandbabies, which are surely right around the corner. Well, the reality is that Johnny just got a part-time job through a temp agency, stuffing envelopes for some corporate conglomerate so that he can afford his efficiency apartment in the musicians' co-op, which is where he met Trudy, the groupie he's sleeping with after his shows, who has more tattoos than Johnny's had hours of sleep in the last week, because he's attended a multitude of after-bars with the band, doing shots of anything that ends up in front of him, and then passing out with his guitar in his hands until Trudy tells him it's time for her to tuck him in. Parents want their children to be doctors, lawyers, teachers, or bankers. They don't want them to be hobos. They don't want them to be strippers, and they don't want them to be musicians. Musicians, essentially bums by choice, living a lifestyle of a gypsy while embracing a Peter Pan mentality, chasing a dream that is both lucid and seemingly just within reach. It's one of those professions where such a small number actually see success enough to bask in the tranquil lap of luxury, excess, and privilege, that for the rest who are aspiring, it's a position of purgatory. There's a need to create and to share, even if the results are met with scrutiny and criticism. There's a constant quest for admiration, even if the lifestyle choices are chaotic and morally unsound. Musicians simply cannot help but want to do the only thing that they feel like they were put on the planet to do. They want to live their art. The musician is delicate and vulnerable. They're hard to read on the outside, but will spill their soul with the slightest provocation. They're insightful and enigmatic, social chameleons with the disposition of a puppy, the resilience of a cockroach, and the sex appeal of creatures most often seen only in Greek mythology. Musicians, like anyone else trying to make a go of it in this era, want to be accepted by their peers, by their counterparts, and by their parents. It seems so simple, so harmless, but the reality is that many of the children who decide this fate will end up parents too. So when your child delivers the news that they want to be a musician when they grow up, I think the best thing to say to them is, I did too.
Sasha Mercedes with an essay about being a musician and being the parent of a musician. Her new CD is called Lucky, and we'll hear more about her in the next edition of Center Stage Minnesota. And also in the set before that was Allison Scott with a cover of Elton John's Madman Across the Water that comes from Hiding Under the Covers Volume 2, a 2012 release from Allison Scott. Allison Scott's guitarist and business partner, producer, and sometimes songwriter is named Kevin Bowe. He plays those roles for a lot of other people over time anyway, and he is sort of a fixture, has been for a while, in Minneapolis. We're going to hear more about him coming up in just a little bit, but right now, from Kevin Bowe and the Okama Prophets, their Natchez Trace release, this is Never Don't Stay. Get right, and maybe I might That's Kevin Bowe and the Okama Prophets from the record Natchez Trace. We just heard the track Never Don't Stay. Kevin Bowe is a veteran of the Twin Cities and Minnesota music scene. These days he makes his living playing roles in the music business that the public may be less aware of. He got a Grammy for his songwriting contribution to Etta James' 2003 release, Let's Roll. His songwriting credits also include writing for Johnny Lang, Kenny Wayne Shepherd, Allison Scott, the list goes on. Further, he's a producer and a hired gun guitarist working with Paul Westerberg, Freddie Johnston, and others. This year he released a record as Kevin Bowe and the Okama Prophets called Natchez Trace. I'm Charlie Polkerbeck. Kevin Bowe was recently able to stop by the Northern Community Radio studios to talk with me. Also joining us were Okama Prophets drummer Peter Anderson, who has been a member of Polera and the Honey Dogs, and Okama Prophets bassist Steve Price, who plays in the current lineup of the Suburbs and was in a great pop band from Minneapolis during the 90s called Rex Daisy. In regards to your new solo record, Natchez Trace, I've read quotes.
Band record.
Well, is that what you're calling it?
When these guys are in the room. Solo record, yeah, if the other guys are in the room, then it's a band record. Okay. If I wasn't here, it'd be my solo project.
But
since they're sitting right here, then yeah, no. It's definitely a band record. When I started the album, I didn't have a band, and so it was just me. But then right at the beginning of the record, I hooked up with these guys, and then I realized, oh, this is the band. So
okay. Well, I've read quotes from you that say this record is purely for my own amusement, and another one that said I didn't compromise a thing. What type of compromise would you be referring to? What do you mean by that?
Couple that come to mind. A lot of time, singer-songwriters or people like me that write songs for other people, when they make a solo record, it's really an advertisement for their songwriting, and they're trying to get other artists to record the songs, and so they'll put songs on the record that they really kind of wrote for other people.
Okay.
But this is their way of, you know, getting air. And that's not bad. Valid, you know. But I didn't do that. I don't know that any of the songs on this record are necessarily ripe for cutting by other artists. So that's one kind of compromise. And the other kind of compromise is if I'm producing a record for another artist or for a band, there's inherently compromise involved because I'm not just doing it to please myself. I need to make the artist happy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I need to make a label happy. If they have a following, I might need to make that following happy. And there's a balance there that it doesn't make it not fun, but you're just the producer, you know, is a member of a team. It's not like you're a dictator or anything. But this project, purely selfish. We don't have a following.
That's what you're
we
saying.
Don't have a following to worry about. We're not burdened by that. Yeah.
Does being able to approach a record on your own terms like that change what the record ultimately kind of represents to you?
Yeah, and I think it's important to be honest. You know, like that's why I put that when I say that in interviews that I just did it for myself. You know, that it definitely changes the way I did it, the way I look at it. And I think the way all three of us look at this project, we're not overly ambitious about this. We want to play. We want to write, we want to record, we want to do it, but we don't have any specific business goals in mind. I always view the other music that I do as dinner and this band as dessert. I mean, working with these guys is so easy, not a lot of talking, just kind of look at each other on stage and start playing. You know, I'm a little older than them, but we've all been there, done that, been down the road.
At this stage of your life and career, do you feel like you're more comfortable and maybe that there's more job security as a key player in the music business and the roles like songwriter, producer, hired gun musician for sessions and touring and roles that for the most part escape the public eye, but is compared to trying to keep a band in the spotlight constantly?
This is easier. And if things weren't going well for me on all those other jobs I do, then I wouldn't be able to afford to do this because I'd be out there hustling so much, you know, but the timing was perfect for this because I've had, you know, a lot of good years. But also, you know, you got to have something that's just for you. Some guys got bowling, some guys got fishing. You know what I mean? And this band, this project, this is the thing that I think if I'm always working for other people, it can make you a little crabby, you know? But this thing, it's weird. In some ways we take it seriously, but only artistically, not like, you know, the whole music business we just pretty much laugh at, you know? With this band, I don't care. I don't care about any of that stuff, trying to please music business people or anyone like that.
You wrote four songs for Etta James, it's Grammy-winning 2003 release, Let's Roll. I read about receiving a phone call from that blues and soul legend.
Can you recount that?
I think I'll never forget that day. A friend of mine was producing the record, or he thought he was. She fired him later. She's Etta was a piece of work. She's a great woman, but she's a complicated woman. And he had asked me for some songs for the record, and I sent him some songs, and I never thought about it again because 90% of the time that stuff turns out to be nothing, you know. And but I sent him off, and then a few months later, I get this call, and it was Etta James. She says, "You know, Kevin? Yeah, Kevin Bowe." And I go, "Yeah." She goes, "This is Etta James." You know, and my heart just about jumped out of my chest. I remember she said two things about the conversation. She said, "Do you write those songs?" And I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "Man, you are a badass songwriter. You're bringing it all back home, just like the Rolling Stones." And it was the first time I ever heard someone put the emphasis on rolling rather than stone, like the Rolling Stones. And I thought that was really cool. And then her second question was, she's like, "Are you a white boy?" And I remember I was feeling pretty full of myself at that point. I said, "Not anymore, ma'am. Not anymore." But she was very. She had a great sense of humor. She was. I miss talking to her. She was. She was really funny in a very self-deprecating way. Not unlike Westerberg, really. Yeah, a lot in common with him, actually. 1, 2, 3, up.
Take my downtime waiting, just waiting for the wheel to turn. She said she didn't love me, just wait and see. Rub on my tummy and I count to three. The changes are coming, boys, just watch and learn. I've been standing by the carousel waiting for the wheel to turn.
Another song there from Natchez Trace, the new record from Kevin Bowe and the Okama Prophets, that was Waiting for the Wheel.
How did you come to the profession of writing songs for other musicians?
I always wanted to be a great guitar player, but I just don't have it in me. I don't suck, but I'm not ever going to be a fancy guitar player that people hire for sessions and stuff like that. And I accidentally fell into songwriting because I was doing a gig at a club. Unfortunately, it wasn't until I was like in my early 30s that I figured it out what I should be doing. And this producer, David Z, came up to me in the club, said, I really like your songs. And he asked me for a tape of them. And he took one of my songs and he put it on Kenny Wayne Shepherd's first album. And it went platinum. And that's when I was like, oh.
What year was that?
Early 90s. Then I kind of stumbled on Johnny Lang when he was just starting to play here up in Fargo. And wrote a bunch of songs for him. And that's when it really took off. And Etta and Lynyrd Skynyrd and Three Dog Night and...
You coaxed Johnny Lang down to Minneapolis?
It didn't take much coaxing. I mean, he'd only been playing for 9 months, but he was already really, really good. And we met at a gig at Playmakers in Fargo, and he thought I was a big deal because I had written for Kenny Wayne Shepherd, and I immediately knew, kid, Kenny Wayne Shepherd's got nothing on you. You're gonna be huge, you know. So I brought him down to Minneapolis. We started writing songs together, and I introduced him to David Z, who started producing him and got him a deal with A&M.
In other interviews, you've touched on being an outcast in the music scene in Minneapolis. I'm not sure what exactly that means. Can you tell us what might make you feel that way? And considering the success that you've had in your career, is that something that bothers you less and less as time moves along?
Yeah, it used to bother me when I was a kid, but now, none of the projects that I've worked on, except for maybe the Westerberg thing, are Minneapolis, you know, hipster projects. They're all... Wait, I mean, Johnny Lang doesn't have anything to do. He didn't come up playing in the 7th Street Entry. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. I've just never had been in one of those bands that lands on the cover of City Pages or whatever, which is, you know, partly my own fault. I was never really in a truly great band back when I was young. It, you know, it takes a lot. A lot of things have to come together to have a, like Steve here was in Rex Daisy. I mean, you could be in a lot of bands before you hit something like Rex Daisy.
Yeah, we didn't know what the hell we were doing.
But it was the right bunch of guys. And the same thing with Peter playing with Polera. I mean, you could be in a lot of bands before you got in a band as good as Polera. I mean, it doesn't just happen. There's a lot of things that go into it, some of which are easy to explain and some of which aren't. And I just never had the right group of people. But then, you know, writing songs for other people kind of turned out to be my ticket in, you know. So, no, it doesn't bother me now. I don't care where people are that hear my music, you know what I mean? I'd rather be doing it on a global scale, you know what I mean, than just on a, just in the 7th Street Entry.
Since I've got you guys here, I'd like to ask you a question about, there's a lot of talk lately about, you know, how there's this new golden age in Minnesota and Minneapolis. It sort of indicates that people think that, like, the 90s was a down period. I feel that way, but what do you guys... Well, early 2000s, 90s and early 2000s. Do you think the quality level was always there?
I think there's more bands and the Twin Cities now that are visible on the national stage probably since the mid-90s.
Yeah.
In the mid-90s, there were maybe half a dozen bands in town that actually did have major label deals and, you know, toured nationally with a lot of visibility and some airplay and TV appearances and stuff like that. And then, I mean, certainly that's happened between then and now, but that seemed to me like to be a time of heightened activity, and then, yeah, the major labels kind of crashed at the end of the 90s decade. And throughout the 2000s, the sort of emergence of the whole Rhymesayers atmosphere, the hip-hop scene, that really is kind of refocused, I think, the attention on the Twin Cities, not just from media and stuff, but from people even like, hey, let's move to Minneapolis and get our thing going, you know what I mean? In the 80s, you would run into people who moved to Minneapolis because the Replacements lived there.
And Purple Rain.
And Purple Rain, Prince, of course.
People thought it was a documentary.
And then so in the 90s, maybe a lot of the folks that had moved there, a lot of those bands started coming to fruition and things like that. But
I agree.
Yeah, I think it's always been vibrant, but right now there's a lot of attention from outside of in town. And of course, you know, just because of the nature of attention that's not local anymore, it's has so many different sources.
I'll just add my two cents that in addition to the bands that manage to stay together and have success with the major label contracts, there's at least a half a dozen that were really good bands that really didn't survive the experience.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, here's one. Here's one right here. You're looking at one.
Yeah. Well, you guys had an Electra contract at one point, didn't you? Or isn't it? What
Geffen.
Geffen. And
this is Steve Price with Rex Daisy.
I'm thinking of Spy Mob, and I'm thinking of, there's a number of them. You think Walt Mink.
Walt Mink.
So, they get signed, and then the label doesn't release their record or releases it and doesn't promote it, and they're locked in with the label. They can't go to a different label and blah, blah, blah. That is the cool thing about the disintegration of the business at the major label level regarding, you know, creative music, is that at least we don't have to... We're all on our own out there, but at least we don't have to deal with that anymore.
Yeah, well, in the 90s, at least, too, it was funded to a certain degree that maybe those things aren't funded anymore. I think bands kind of run their courses, and it's very possible that a band that didn't make it on a major label might have had an equally bad experience on an indie label.
That's true.
Too, but without some of the perks of, you know what I mean? So it's hard to say. Bands do run their courses, and a band that's together for 10 years, I think, is... an anomaly, right?
Yeah, it is,
so,
it is.
I don't know what to say.
We never think about major labels. I mean, it's not a part of my daily work life regarding any of the 10 projects I'm working on at any given week. It never even comes up in my mind. I never think about major labels. I haven't in years. I'm not saying I think evil of them. I'm saying it's not a part of my life. No. We never think about, you know, like those words that we never use anymore that we used to use in the 90s, demo. Why would you do a demo anymore? If you record it, sell it. If it's recorded crappy, then do it over. Showcase, because what that means to me is a gig you don't get paid for. Why would you do that? A gig that's no fun.
To people that aren't even
that aren't, fans. Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? And there was another one too. Showcase, demo, and shopping. Shopping? I shop for groceries. You know what I mean? If I'm out shopping, I don't want to shop. I want to sell. I made a record. I want you to buy it, you know? So we don't talk like that. We don't use those words.
Huh. All right. You got to have some replacement story in your pocket. I know I had to go right down the middle there, but I don't. Tell me something.
A replacement story?
Yeah.
Okay, happened. Here's a good one. In 1980, I had just gotten out of rehab, and I was they threw my ass in a halfway house. And they'd let us out on weekends to go to these teen dances, which were just, it was... horrible. It's horrible. And what's even worse is the place was called Team House in St. Paul, where they'd shuttle us off for these dances. And some idiot booked the Replacements to play one of these sober teen dances. Think about it. And so it was their first gig ever under the name Replacements. And it changed my life. I remember Tommy was 13. He had a pot leaf decal on the back of his bass. And most of their set was Johnny Thunder's covers. And they weren't the best band I've ever seen. In fact, they were probably the worst band I've ever seen, but they were definitely the best band I've ever seen. And it changed my life forever, because that's when I got what made punk rock, what made rock and roll great, which had been lost for the latter half of the 70s with Journey and Foreigner and stuff like that, where music got to be so everything has to be perfect. And that was that's when I fell in love with Minneapolis music, is that night. I've never lost it. One of the most important nights of my life.
Well, thanks for coming in. Thanks for your time, and good luck with the new record. And
thanks for playing it. We appreciate it.
Getting another Grammy or two for your wallet. So, you know,
with this lot? I don't know.
Thanks to Kevin Bowe, Peter Anderson, and Steve Price for finding time between soundcheck and dinner to talk to me here on Center Stage, Minnesota. From their Natchez Trace release, this is Kevin Bowe and the Okama Prophets with Just Restless.
Just restless. Just.
Natchez Trace is the record release from Kevin Bowe and the Okama Prophets from this year. That was just restless. Definite nod to the Minneapolis garage rock sound there. This is Center Stage Minnesota. It is our program that focuses on the talents and the accomplishments and the music scene in Minnesota. We try to help you make wise decisions about what to purchase, what to go see. Maybe you just like the show coming up. Well, you heard Kevin Bowe talk about seeing the Replacements in 1980. I don't think I can dig out anything that sounded exactly like what he witnessed, but I'm going to come as close as I can. Approximately 4 minutes of Replacements music on the way. We'll be right back.
17, 18, 19, 21. Smoking in the middle, let me tell you something. Come on over left, come on over right, right. In the middle. Stop, stop in the middle. Stop, stop in the middle.
Polera was a band that landed on Interscope Records during the early mid-90s, put out a number of records, and that also featured Peter Anderson, who we heard from in that interview, on drums. And this is a 2002 release, fairly late for Polera. Is This It? From Jetpack Blues. From The Replacement, Stink. Kids Don't Follow, plus 7 songs. We heard Stuck in the Middle. Not the most flattering song ever written about the Midwest. And from The Replacements, Sorry Ma, Forgot to Take Out the Trash, we heard I'm in Trouble. This has been Center Stage Minnesota. I am Charlie Polkerbeck. I have been your host for another edition of the show. It's been a fun one. Taking us out is a band that Steve Price was in during the 90s, and they happened to produce a song that is still one of my favorites. Along from a great cover of the Welcome Back, Cotter theme song that's on this record that I am not going to play. You have to find that from Rex Daisy. Give it a listen, though. This is Stuck on AM.
The highest God.